Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio, WGNRadio.com. Well, my guest today is one of the nation's top political satirists, has been for years. PJ O'Rourke can be seen, read, and heard all over the media landscape at places like The Atlantic and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and of course, past life at the Lampoon. O'Rourke is a reporter who has covered war and crime, and for his 19th book, he's turned his attention to finance. The book is called None of My Business. PJ explains money, banking, debt, equity, assets, liabilities, and why he's not rich, and neither are you. O'Rourke takes on finance, the economy, and, of course, the politics behind all of it. The great PJ O'Rourke with me today. Mr. O'Rourke, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome.
You have done so much in your career, obviously concentrating on politics, but you've also covered war, the Iraq War, other places as well. Why turn to finance?
Well, I was a war correspondent for 20 years, but I kind of aged out at the end of the Iraq War. I woke up one morning out there in the desert thinking, I am too old to be scared stiff and too stiff to sleep on the ground.
So
I figured, I'd take on a subject that was metaphorically scary. Well, not so. I mean, it's really scary, but at least you don't get shot at too often. And that's what the heck is going on with money in the modern economy.
It's amazing, too, to think about all the commentary and the satire in this book. But it really isn't a topic, an area that a lot of Americans just don't seem to understand and truthfully don't want to understand.
And who can blame them one bit? I mean, one thing that once we moved into this digital revolution, the economy becomes really, really hard to understand. I mean, what is Amazon? Jeff Bezos, the richest person in the world ever. Amazon, the biggest company in the United States. And what is it? It's a glorified yard sale.
It's so true.
General Motors, when they used to make cars, GE, they made electricity, Colgate, Palmolive, they made toothpaste. We used to know what the companies that were dominating the American economy did. What does Facebook do except cause trouble?
And you have some great chapters in this book, talking about why you're not rich and why we aren't either, but also talking about blockchain and other things. But the one that I really enjoyed, the strange shape-shifting symbol of value. When we start to think about what money is and what money means to us, that's really at the core of all of it. Just this concept that maybe other forces are trying to sell on us, but what money actually is, what the value of it is.
Oh, don't start thinking about it or your head will explode. Because, money starts out as barter. We trade pigs for goats, and then we think, oh, well, there's got to be like a better way to do this. So we'll have coins, and the coins are supposed to be worth something. And, we don't have to make change by reaching in our pocket to bring out a ham sandwich and a couple of pork chops to buy a goat. And then you get fiduciary money, which is pieces of paper that promise to give you something valuable when you turn them in. But nowadays what we have, and what we've had for more than a century, is mainly fiat money. And fiat money is just money that the government issues, and it's there because it's there because it's there because it's there. You take a $10 bill and you go down to the Treasury, what they will give you for it is $10. They won't give you any silver. They won't give you any gold. They'll give you $10. They'll give you 10 singles, 2 fives. They'll give it to you in quarters, nickels, dimes, even pennies if you want. But all they'll give you for that $10 is $10, and it's worth $10 because the Federal Reserve said it's worth $10. And again, like I say, if you start thinking about this, your head will explode, or you'll buy cryptocurrency and then you'll be sorry.
Well, it is. It's the value, this idea of what money is worth. And yes, of course, the Treasury will give it 10 to 10, but people are selling in different places, whether it be digital or as we see in investment firms. They're saying, I can make that $10 20, or I can that $10 is actually infinite value.
Yeah, or none.
But they've played with the basic concept of what value is.
And one of the things that really worries me that I talk a lot about in the book, and I try to be humorous about it, but it is pretty grim, is that in response to the 2008 fall-draw, central banks all over the world lowered their interest rates so much that an honest saver, you're always taught to save as a kid, put money in a piggy bank,
right.
put the contents of the piggy bank in the bank. You can't get enough money out of that money to keep pace with inflation, which then drives people to riskier positions just in order to make a decent think of it as rent. I mean, you should get a certain rent for your savings, just like if you bought a house. And the government's basically telling you that your house, you have to rent your house for nothing. I mean, that's weird.
Yeah. It's such an interesting topic in the book, of course, like you said. I mean, a lot of it is poking fun and also, you know, pointing out some of the foibles of the digital age. But when we talk about capitalism, is this capitalism at its purest form? Are we seeing the idea of greed is good and you know, make as much money as possible, be damned everybody else? Is this the tenets in which our economic system was built on, or has it splintered? Are we in a different world now than what our forefathers kind of looked at the beginning of our economy?
Oh, different world. I mean, there's nothing wrong. I mean, capitalism shouldn't even be used really as any kind of criticism, because capitalism is just an observation that in order to make something or build something, you have to accumulate some skills and goods and so on to do that. So if you're going to make a lawnmower, you have to accumulate some metal and some skills with the metal and some designs and so on, and that's your capital, plus some money to market this lawnmower. And anything, whether it's done by the government or whether it's done by an individual, whether it's done by a corporation, requires capital to produce anything new. So nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But the free market gets wildly distorted when nobody can understand the free market. And any time a new technology comes in, people get really confused. You know, when electricity was invented, people thought it cured arthritis. They were going to send electricity through the air. Everything was, you know, we were going to have electric balloons. Nobody really knew quite what to do with this stuff, and I think that's the situation we're in with the digital economy.
The other part of the book that you talk about the middle class and how expensive it is for the middle class right now, not just to stay in the middle class, but overall, we see this, and this is anecdotal, of course, but everywhere you go, it seems like the middle class is just being...
suffering.
Yeah, and where does that come from? Because it used to be that was the safe place to be.
Well, two big factors are education and housing costs. I did the calculation. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, and I grew up, you know, in a city neighborhood. And my dad made maybe 12 grand a year on a good, he sold cars, maybe made 12 grand. Now, of course, you got to adjust that for inflation, and that's probably like 100 grand today. But still, it's not like we were rolling in it. And we had a four-bedroom house and two cars, a week at the lake in the summer, and great schools, and a perfectly safe neighborhood. I don't think we even knew where the house key was. Now, what's it cost you to get that? Today is closer to $500,000, depending on where you're living. But if you're living in one of the, like, the hip cities, and remember back in the 50s, Toledo was a hip city on the cutting edge of glass manufacture and Jeeps and all sorts of other heavy industry. So if you're in an equivalent place, say Portland or Seattle, today it's going to cost you about $500,000.
Wow.
The housing costs are just out of control, and that has a lot to do with finding a safe neighborhood. No longer as easy as it was back in the 1950s. And then come schools, and schools are just fabulously expensive, and people feel compelled to send their kids to private schools for good reason, because a lot of the public schools are not only not much for much good, but not very safe. So in order to get a decent school, you have to either move to a wildly expensive suburb with good public schools, or you have to send your kids to wildly expensive private schools.
Yeah, and I mean, it really is. They put a premium on safe, on the concept of safety.
And then right? If you take these increases of costs, plus of medical care has increased in cost too, but I'm sort of stipulating we get something out of that. Because as good a life as my dad led, he died at 49, and that probably wouldn't have happened today. So let's say we get something out of increased medical care costs. But you take this increased cost for middle-class life, and then because of our own behavior, you have to double that because now everybody gets divorced and they're supporting two families in a middle-class life.
PJ, for you as a war correspondent and for the 19 books that you've written, you have taken on some taboo subjects that you don't think you're going to find much funny in. And
right.
That's a stock and trade. But when you're talking about things that people don't understand or that don't necessarily understand how it might impact them in the short term, 5, 10, 15, even, you know, next year. Is it harder to make jokes about this stuff than say something that people understand? And I know it's
no,
ridiculous
because
to say.
There's you know, at the heart of it, there's a comic aspect to going broke. It's not comic to the person who is broke, but, you know, on the other hand, nobody's dead. So, no, I didn't really. And you know, guys like Mark Zuckerman make it really easy. You know, when one of your top, imagine a top industrialist from the 50s or 60s, even the 70s, you know, going on TV and smoking pot.
Go, right.
I don't think I'm buying toothpaste from him anymore. Who knows what's in it?
I wonder at the end of this. Now you had to put some research into understanding the world of finance and understanding our economy. As you now have that knowledge, and you are now one of the nation's foremost experts on this topic.
Right.
What's
me.
The takeaway? What should we be concerned
the
about?
The takeaway is to turn everything over to my wife, who was a business major. I was an English major, or as they call it at business school, stupid.
P.J. O'Rourke, the book is called None of My Business. P.J. explains money, banking, debt, equity, assets, liabilities, and why he's not rich, and neither are you. Out now. Mr. O'Rourke, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
You are welcome. Thank you.